Okay, preventive health checks. This is section 8 within your manual. I'm sorry, it's week 8 within your manual. Part of section 2, I believe it is. The primary prevention should be live a healthy lifestyle. That makes sense, right? What does live a healthy lifestyle mean? It means eating well, being physically active, and avoiding substances or practices that cause harm. Secondary prevention is seeing your doctor for regular checkups. We should check regularly to make sure we know what normal is for you. The doctors know what normal is, but maybe you're outside the range or something, but you need to figure out what the baseline is for you. And then check for any abnormalities, because early diagnosis and treatment for disease is what cures most diseases. Okay? So there are preventive checks that are important, and these typically are part of, are given to us by the Preventive Medicine Services Task Force. Blood pressure should be less than 120 over 80. Anything higher than that is pre-hypertension, and hypertension is defined as 140 over 90 or above. This is where we want you to start taking medicine when this is here repeatedly. Why? Because the harmful effects of stroke and heart attack may be greater than the side effects from any of the medicine. But first, you want to try some lifestyle changes at first. We notice that as blood pressure rises, for both men and women, the relative risk of cardiovascular events increases. Okay? So even at 120 over 80, the risk is slight, is small, but it's there. So this is the goal, less than 120 over 80. Okay? One out of every four of us have high blood pressure. And half of those that have high blood pressure don't know it. And a quarter of those that know it and take medicine don't take it regularly. If you could lower the systolic blood pressure by 5 points, you would have 64,000 fewer deaths from heart disease, 23,000 fewer deaths from stroke, 168,000 fewer deaths from all causes each year. Just blood pressure. I've got a study on my desk that shows of all the things we can interact, smoking is still the most significant, and then blood pressure is the second most important thing to make change. And what affects blood pressure?
Exercise,
obesity, diet, stress. Okay? Blood pressure could be the most significant thing you could do for your community next to helping them stop smoking. So achieve a healthy weight. Other things you do for hypertension, reduce sodium. We need to eat some sodium. It's next to impossible to eat no sodium. But it's low sodium we want to concern ourselves if you're susceptible to sodium and blood pressure. Exercise, limit alcohol or no. Get potassium. Choose a healthy meals. The DASH diet, it's a good diet. High in fruits and vegetables, have you heard that before? Low fat dairy products or none. Reduce saturated fat intake. Well, DASH is a specifically hypertension diet. That's what it's called. It's a DASH diet study. It's essentially fruits and vegetables, low fat. Okay? Dietary approaches to stop hypertension. Okay? Cholesterol. Less than 200 is desirable, but what's optimum? Less than 160. When I was a vegan, my cholesterol was 92 and 93. Okay? I've got to eat cheese and eggs to get my cholesterol up to 130. But I don't have to. I mean, good cholesterol, nothing wrong with that. I'm not going to die of cholesterol-related heart disease. Okay? My wife eats the same way I do. Her cholesterol is high. So is her mother. She has familial hyperlipidemia. Okay? So when I graduated from Loma Linda, 300 was desirable. Less than 300 was desirable cholesterol 35 years ago. We've changed that to 200, and ideal is 160 or less. Okay? If you don't know your numbers, you need to at least once a year. Cholesterol, you can see these here. This is our goal. As it increases, we get these dramatic increases in heart disease. So this is why there's modest changes here. So this is the desirable. This is upper limit of normal. But look at the ideal. That's what we shoot for. Again, cholesterol and mortality rates. The highest level of cholesterols, higher heart disease. So there's that artery. And this is where we get in trouble. This should be nice and smooth, a little bit thinner. This is the intimal lining of the artery. But we get these deposits, we get these bulges. If we get inflammation, it becomes atheromatous, ulcerative, atherosclerosis. And this is moderate atherosclerosis. And this is more severe. Okay? Now, if you want to understand, I sometimes bring in straws and let everybody suck on a straw. And if you concentrate, you can breathe through that straw as long as you sit still. But then I have you sit up, stand up, sit down, stand up, sit down. And if I forced you to continue breathing through that straw and forced you to continue sitting up and down, you would eventually pass out. That's what's happening to your heart when it's like this over time. Okay? HDL. This is what we typically call the good kind of cholesterol. It's high-density lipoprotein. Okay? It kind of serves as a dump truck. And it leaves the liver and circulates in the bloodstream and attaches itself to other cholesterol molecules like LDL and VLDL. And it brings those back to the liver to be metabolized for energy, for cell membranes, for many numerous bodily healthy functions. Our liver produces anywhere from 1,200 milligrams to 1,500 milligrams of cholesterol every day. It doesn't take much dietary cholesterol to get us in trouble for those individuals who are susceptible. So the goal is to have a cholesterol level in men, HDL of men over 45 and women over 55. What is your HDL? 62, great. Mine's 62. 63, 64, 62. Okay, that's because of all the exercise and good diet. So how do you get a healthy cholesterol? Healthy weight. Limit animal saturated fats. No trans fats. Limit dietary cholesterol. Less than 200 milligrams per day is the goal. Zero may be ideal. How much is 200 milligrams of cholesterol? That's not even one egg. Okay? And don't forget about the hidden eggs in cookies, cakes, and candies. Waffles, packaged breakfast foods. Choose healthy fats that have been unhydrogenated. Choose polyunsaturated mono and foods with healthy fats like how many milligrams of cholesterol in avocado?
Zero.
None. Olives? None. Nuts? None. Seeds? None. There is no cholesterol in plant foods. Unless that corn has been eaten by the cow, then there's a cholesterol in the cow. Okay? So eat unrefined foods high in fiber. These all help decrease cholesterol. Oats, oat bran, barley, pectin-rich fruit like apples, beans, psyllium. This is why you buy in the pharmacies the psyllium, fiber. What are they called? Metamucil is one of them, and there's two or three others. If you've got high cholesterol, try these sorts of things. Make sure you're eating oatmeal every day, and barley, and beans, and apples, and fruits, and whole grains, and all these other things, and psyllium. If that doesn't work after 6 months, the doctor probably needs to put you on some medicine. Okay? Work with your doctor. Try some of these things. They may put you on some supplements if you're resisting the medicine, but eventually you may need to take the medicine. So here's a control diet, which is a good diet. Low in saturated fat, whole grains, non-fat milk, non-fat cheese, egg replacer, vegetarian diet. That's a good vegetarian diet, okay? Then they were put on a control diet plus lovastatin, which is at the time was one of the lipid-lowering agents. And they're also put on a best diet. Low saturated fat, vegetarian, soy, almonds, oat fiber, bread, psyllium seed, high soluble fiber. So the control diet had a modest decrease in LDL. The control diet plus the drugs, lovastatin, decreased the cholesterol 30 points. But look what the best diet did without the drugs. 28-point decrease. Okay? That's the good news about lifestyle medicine. It really does work when you go on the program. But you can't do the program for a week and then off for 3 days, then do it for 2 weeks, then off for 4 days. You know, the body can't handle that. It's not going to lower your cholesterol. You got to be on the program. Glucose. Normal fasting blood glucose is less than 100. Non-fasting, less than 200. Okay, but we like a fasting glucose. Cholesterols don't need to be a fasting test. It doesn't matter. But glucose does. But we've got fasting norms and non-fasting norms. Pre-diabetes is 100 to 125 blood sugar. And some of you in the islands, do you use millimoles? Okay, so you have to turn that into millimoles. I think that's 1.7, or I can't remember now what it is. Anyways, diabetes in America we call 126. It used to be 140. Okay? And we used to say borderline blood pressure or borderline diabetes. Now we no longer say that because borderline means, whew, I don't have that disease yet. I don't have to change anything. We want you to know you've got this disease. It's called pre-diabetes. And on the path you're on now, you're going to become diabetic or you're going to become hypertensive. So you want to begin making steps now. It's easier to make steps now during the pre-phase. We know a lot about diabetes. Leading cause of many of these conditions you can see here. Signs and symptoms of diabetes. Extreme hunger because you've got lots of sugar floating around, but it's not getting to your cells to feed them. They're blocked. The insulin is not allowed to open the gates to let this sugar in. Thirst, unusual thirst, weight loss, fatigue, frequent infections, blurred vision, cuts and bruises that won't heal, tingling numbness, this is the peripheral neuropathy. Diabetes can be prevented. Two simple changes can cut your risk of type 2 diabetes in half: exercising and maintaining your weight. Incredible. So participants were formed in three groups: placebo, medication, or lifestyle intervention. Okay?
Can I just ask, you know, inside it said 30 minutes before. And of course, would you wrote that for 60 minutes a minute?
Well, that's what the study did, but I'm always recommending 60 minutes. Because 30 is the absolute minimum. So if you try and get 60 all the time, then all the time you get at least 30. If you try and get 30, some of the time you're going to get 15 or 20. I try and exercise every day so that I end up doing it five times a week. If I tried five times a week, I might end up only three. Okay? Oops. Well, yeah. Here's the intervention. Weight loss goal. Exercise. 150 minutes a week. Improve eating. You know, high fiber. Lower saturated fat. Lower glycemic. That's fruits and vegetables. Okay, you understand that. Here's what happened. After 3 years, diabetes incidence was reduced by 58% lower in the lifestyle group. The intervention group, the drug group, only 31% compared to the placebo. The lifestyle intervention group did better than those were given the pharmaceutical agents. These four major risk factors: overweight, sedentary, smoking, poor diet. Women with none of these risks cut their risk of diabetes by 88%. That's almost a guarantee. See, that's so high, it's almost a guarantee. Up to 91%. Risks were similar even if they had a family history of diabetes. So if you've got a family history of diabetes or had gestational diabetes, which is diabetes when you were pregnant, then you're at high risk to diabetes. You need to do these sorts of things to prevent them. Preventive cancer. At age 50, we should start be checking for cancer, for colon cancer, earlier for breast cancer and cervical cancer. But the physicians will want to test for blood in the stool. They might want to do a flexible sigmoidoscopy, or even better, a colonoscopy. I could hardly wait till I got to age 50 so I could have my first colonoscopy, because I wanted to tell people about it, and I wanted to see it. And so my friend, an internist, agreed to do a colonoscopy on me in his office, and he kept me awake, and I watched the whole thing, and it was a marvelous experience. Now, there's this minor, it's an interesting phenomenon to have that tube sliding into you, but it's not uncomfortable at all. It's just kind of, oh, that's interesting. What is difficult is the air he's got to push in to distend the bowel so that the camera can take a look-see. And if an internist would take a couple hours to do the procedure, there'd be no discomfort at all. But they're not going to do that. And so the air would just distend, and it would make me uncomfortable, and we'd negotiate waiting a little bit, and then we'd move along. So my first bowel exam was done without any anesthesia, because I wanted to watch it. I wanted to participate in the process, because I wanted to tell you it's okay to do that test. It's no big deal. It's a much bigger big deal to have a bowel cancer and have them surgically remove 3 or 4 feet and then put a bag outside your stomach so that you can have a bowel movement. Now, my wife gets really upset at me when I bring these visual images to you, but I'm doing it on purpose. It's a whole lot less uncomfortable to have a simple bowel exam than it is to have the surgery and the bag outside to deal with normal daily bodily functions. Don't wait too long. Everybody, if you've got health insurance, your insurance will pay for this at age 50. Okay? If you don't have health insurance, I'd get it done anyway, somehow, some way. Okay? Now, I just had my I just had my last one last fall, and I chose to go to sleep. It was wonderful. I went to sleep. I woke up. Everything's done. No big deal. And then they gave me about 30 pictures to look at. And they were all nice and normal, and I was really happy that I've had two colonoscopies and everything seems to be normal. Okay? That's good news. Don't be afraid to have your colonoscopy when it's time. And if they find some polyps in there, they'll just clip them right out. And if some of them look a little suspicious, they'll do a biopsy, and if they get it early enough, it'll come back normal, hopefully. Get it done. Don't wait. Of course. You sign a piece of paper saying, yes, it's possible, but if the surgeon or the internist knows what they're doing and goes along slowly and your bowel's not kinked, and it shouldn't be, there is a minor complication of perforation that has happened in those with weakened bowels. Okay? But someone with healthy bowels, it's very, very difficult to do that. There's also a minor complication to the anesthesia. You might be allergic. So, yeah, there's complications. But I tell you, the complication of having surgery, having a bowel cancer, having surgery, having to wear a bag outside my belly is not something I want to prevent that at all costs. Yes? Yes. Yes. Same age. So people at high risk, if you've had numerous polyps, history of inflammatory bowel disease, history of colon cancer in your family, personal history of any cancer, prior history of any cancer. But, when you've got no history and your bowels are clean every 10 years, you want to have that test. My wife is due to have her test next week or next month. She's 50-something. 55 or 56, something like that. So she's waited 5 extra years because she's a nurse and she doesn't like doctors.
The fun part is the day before, isn't it?
Well, yeah, the fun part. The hardest part of this whole test was the lack of sleep because I had to take this preparation to drink. I had to not eat anything for a time, only eat certain things for 3 days prior, eat nothing for the day prior, and then take this drink to clean out the bowel. And having become such intimate with my toilet for 30 or 40 times that evening, I hardly got any sleep at all. That the worst part is the preparation. Get it done. If you don't want to, get over it. Okay? Bowel cancer is too common. Here's a little cancer polyp here. And I just get it done, okay? This is the virtual colonoscopy view. There are some facilities that offer sophisticated ultrasound to do a virtual test, so there's no risk of any perforation. There's nothing wrong with these. They seem to be very effective. But if they do find a polyp, they still got to go in and do what they got to do, okay? But in my case, this would have been something good to do. Pap test. Women have been doing the pap test for decades now. An annual pap test and pelvic exam is recommended 3 years after becoming sexually active. Some are recommending even earlier than that. Women after 30, after 3 normal consecutive tests, then they can probably decrease the frequency of pap tests. After age 70, you can probably stop taking the test if it's normal 3 consecutive times. So there's some guidelines there you can look at. These are somewhat controversial. If your insurance will pay for it, get it done every year. Yeah. Right. You have that personal choice. You can say you don't want to, but I'd get it done, frankly.
What happened also, I think it's a CA 125? Is that it? I hear a lot from February.
those cancer markers are not yet conveniently reimbursable by the insurance companies. I don't have an opinion on that. Some of those are women who are at high risk who were sexually active early, have had multiple sex partners, cigarette smoking, and some cultures have a higher risk than others. Okay, why? I don't know. Just pay attention and get your test done. Okay. Now we've got a new one coming out, the HPV vaccine. My kids don't need to have it, but some kids do. So, mammograms. This is somewhat controversial, but I'd get it done if I was me. Right now, after age 40, every 1 to 2 years, some are saying the cost of false positives and the problems that encounters is not worth the extra risk that you maybe not need to have until after age 50. Boy, I'd want to get that done, know what my normality is, and then get it done frequently. Whatever your doctor and you can recommend. Women at high risk of family history of breast cancer, over 30 and never been pregnant. Okay? The Catholic nuns have a much higher risk of breast cancer. So they want to make sure the other lifestyle factors they can influence are normalized. Obesity, personal history of any cancer, high alcohol intake. Prostate exam for men. Again, at age 50. Well, even before age 50, we should start the digital rectal exam. When I had my first digital exam, I went to see my internist. He was a good friend of mine. We did a lot of family things together. He said, would you mind, doing a complete history and physical? He says, no. We had to do it on all of our classmates, both male and women. Why not do it on you? And I figured that was a good thing. So we started out with that process. Everything is fine. As we get older, though, we may need to do some PSA tests. Okay? This is very common in women or in men as we get older for this to get slightly inflamed and to have what some call old age disease, where you can't sleep at night because you're having to get up. Old man's disease. So you have to get up and use the restroom quite often because you can't hold a full bladder as often as you can when you're younger. So your husband, your dad, you should be recommending these tests with their physician to look these out. There's some. If you've got simply inflammation or an enlarged prostate, it's real easy to treat that. But if you got cancer growing there, it's also real easy to treat it if you get it early, while it's completely encapsulated and not spread. Don't ignore that, because when it's spread, it's a terminal illness eventually. Okay? Men at high risk, family history. Men at high risk should be screened at as early as age 845. Family history of prostate. Some cultures have higher risk. Obesity. Normal PSA should be less than 2.5, and it should really be as close to zero as possible. So I'm really, really good to be less than 0.2 or 0.1. That would be perfectly normal. Other cancer checks. Be sure you work with your dentist to check your oral cavity. Work with your dermatologist to check with your skin. And there may be some thyroid nodules growing, some vocal cord nodules. If anything's changing, let the appropriate physician know so that they can do some work. You should be doing self-breast exam and self-testicular exam at least once a month to make sure you don't find any unusual nodules or bumps. If you do find some, get them checked out. The earlier you get these things checked out, the better that will be. Your doctor should be asking you about these things. If he or she is not asking you these things, fire that doctor and get a new one. Because this is what involves lifestyle medicine. Okay? Immunizations. Don't forget about this DPT, tetanus, diphtheria, and typhoid vaccine. We should have this every 10 years or so. Okay? And it's real easy to forget about tetanus, because as we get older, we think we don't need any more vaccinations. But if we scratch ourselves out in the garden and we get some dirt in there, that could be enough to cause tetanus, some serious reactions that we don't see very often. People age 65 or older may need a pneumonia shot every year. And now we're recommending annual flu shots, not just for older people. We recommend annual flu shots for all medical personnel or anybody who doesn't want to get the flu. Now the age doesn't matter. Immunizations are one of the most effective ways of preventing serious illness. It is excellent public health principle. All children should be up to date with immunizations. I vaccinated all of my children for all the usual and customary vaccinations. In fact, when my neighbor kids had chickenpox, I asked permission for my kids to go over and play with them. I wanted them to get chickenpox as a young person rather than getting chickenpox as an adult, where it's much, much more serious. Okay? Same with measles. My first child, the measles vaccine wasn't there, so I had her go over and play with someone who got measles. My two boys, there was a vaccine available. Unfortunately, Stephen, when he got his vaccine, it didn't work. There was a vaccine for measles that was a problem in the 80s somewhere. And so if you were taking that vaccine, you should go back and get another one. Anyways, all my kids are up to date. And I've encouraged my kids to get their kids vaccinated as well. Hospital admissions for influenza, 46% reduction in pneumonia, and pneumonia by 29 to 52%. Mortality from all causes decreased by 57%. So there's benefit in having these vaccinations for those folks over age 65. Don't forget about checking your hearing and your vision. I managed a rehab department at Hinsdale Hospital for 3 years. I was there for 10, and I had my nurses coming and just saying, we've got this social worker. He used to be a really good worker, but he's just not following up with what he's agreed to do. And they asked me to fire him. Well, I'll come and listen to what's going on. And my first meeting with this interaction of professionals said, this guy's losing his hearing. He can't hear. And so I had a discussion with him. I suggested he go get, I told him what the problem was. He understood there was a problem. He thought he was following up on anything, but he realized when he was confronted with what he wasn't following up, that he wasn't following up with everything. He went to get his hearing tested, and he found out that he had significant hearing loss. Didn't even know about it. His wife was covering up for him. They didn't know that they were doing that together. He got his hearing checked. He got some hearing aids. And now he's a wonderful employee. Now following up. Now he can hear and communicate with all the professional staff. It may be as simple as that. So check your hearing. Check your vision. Be sure your doctor is checking for glaucoma and retinal problems and cataracts. And they do. This is what they do. Don't forget about dental exams. Regular dental exams. We want to prevent the loss of teeth so that we can chew food effectively. We want to have tight gum around the base of our tooth so it protects our root canal and protects the tooth from decay. We need to be brushing our teeth. We need to be using picks to clean our teeth. We need to be using dental floss at least once a day. Okay? Let me ask you a question. You don't have to floss all your teeth. You understand that? You just got to floss the ones you want to keep. Because as we get older, we have less predisposition to have cavities. We have greater disposition to have gum disease. Both of my parents, when they died, they had no teeth. Both of my parents had their teeth removed in their 50s. I can't remember ever seeing my parents brush their teeth. And I know they never flossed their teeth. Both my parents ate all the food that I don't eat. Some of the good food that I eat, they did have some of that. Both my parents smoked. And they had significant gum disease that they had to have their teeth removed. In the early 1600s in London, the fifth and sixth leading cause of death were listed as teeth. Severely eroded, inflamed, bacteria-infested gums. By the early 1700s, diet improved and dentition stayed intact longer, but cavities and gum disease became prevalent. An ancient rule said that a slave who lost an eye while working must be freed. The same rule said that a slave could go free for the loss of one tooth. Eyes and teeth have had enormous personal value for a long time. Decay occurs early at any age. Fillings will only last 15 to 25 years, depending on the kind and how much you grind your teeth. Decay in later years occurs at the base of the gums. So you want to brush and floss, good nutrition, regular dental, fluoride in water perhaps. That's controversial. Fluoride in toothpaste reduces decay by 40% or more. So keep sugar intake low. Do you know we eat well over 140 pounds of sugar per person per year? When you and I don't eat that much sugar, guess how much others must be eating to get us this average? Limit frequency of sweets, sugary foods. Promote adequate fluoride. That's controversial in water, but toothpaste, okay. Promote fruits, vegetables, whole grains, nuts, and foods. Have you ever heard that before? Man, it affects all conditions. So gum disease or periodontal disease, when the immune system weakens or fails, especially with a genetic predisposition. So to avoid gum disease, you want to brush and floss regularly, eat healthy foods, don't smoke or use alcohol, maintain overall health, and get regular dental checks. And we should be getting our teeth cleaned every 3 to 6 months. Yes, it costs money. But I think the prevention is cheaper than the cure. So it's important you understand the health problems you may have. Ask your doctor for clarification. Work in partnership. Take care of your health and achieve your goal of health, abundant health, and fitness.
This media was produced by Audioverse for the NAD Health Summit. If you would like to learn more about the NAD Health Summit, please visit www.nadhealthsummit.com. Or if you would like to listen to more free online sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.